FromYourFan.com, Rise and Shot Podcast, episode 363, and I'm your host, Adam Mandelman. The men didn't make even the NIT, but the women got a seventh seed and a potential path to be a Cinderella. Matt and I break down their chances to make a long tournament run. Also on the show, spring football true or false, Captain Marvel, and our ever-popular MLB preview. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shot Podcast. Find all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, and listen to us right now. Last week, Matt, we were together and recorded the podcast.
Yeah, I'm sitting right where we were.
Yeah, I am not. I'm sitting in a hotel.
Nice.
So not quite the same. But you and I had a question last week about Captain Marvel, which we could not answer because neither of us had seen the film.
Correct.
But straight out of the gate, we got a tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
From Randy Whittle on Facebook. You can interact with us on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Randy said, if you have seen Captain Marvel, how did you like it, and where does it rank in the MCU for you? Okay, that, and then his second part of his question is our anticipation level for Avengers Endgame. Matt, we saw Captain Marvel together last week.
We did.
With some of our children. Many of our children, actually.
Well, with some of your children and some of my children. You and I don't have any children together.
Well, I think that was probably evident in my statement, but fine. Thank you for the important clarification. How did you enjoy Captain Marvel?
I loved Captain Marvel. I thoroughly enjoyed Captain Marvel.
I enjoyed it as well. We're going to have a slight criticism of it, I think, from Andre Hutchins later in the program. Maybe now I'm going to have a beef with him.
Such a wet blanket.
I'm going to have a beef with him. A tofu.
Low-key beef.
Low-key beef.
Low-key beef.
We'll talk about that later in the show. He asked where it fits in the MCU. Next week, you and I are going to do an MCU movie draft. I didn't want to pop this on you. But
why?
Just,
you always throw stuff like that on me. Why are you changing your MO now?
This one requires thought. This one requires
thought. They all require thought.
No, this one's too important. Can't just
do all sorts of stuff on this show without any previous thought. Come on, man.
Not as important as the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We don't.
All right. I'll give you that.
So I also enjoyed it. I don't think it's probably in my top five, but and I would like to see it again too, because if I like a movie, I always want to see it again. So anyway, all right. So let's move on and talk. Let's do the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News.
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, the men's volleyball team They beat two ranked opponents last week in Provo. Number 4, UCLA in 4 sets, and number 6, Pepperdine in 5 sets. They moved up 1 to the 8th ranked team in all of the land. And they have the BYU Invitational coming up this weekend, and they will have matches against Princeton, McKendree, which I don't even know who that is, and number 2 ranked Hawaii.
I actually know McKendree. Familiar with McKendree. Oh. It's a long story.
We don't really care, do we? About your long story. All
right. If it were, yeah, we don't care.
Okay. Another good chance for men's volleyball to get a win in Provo against a ranked opponent when they face off against Hawaii on, I think, Saturday night. Men's basketball is not in the NCAA tournament. We'll get to that in a minute. Women's basketball found out about their seeding before they were supposed to.
Along with everybody else.
So ESPNU.
Way to go, ESPN.
ESPNU inadvertently showed portions of the women's bracket before the selection show that evening. Matt, big deal or no deal that people saw this a little early?
No deal.
It's a no deal, right? Who cares?
The only people it really hurts is ESPN, who was trying to hold on to it so they could have their little reveal show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a little anticlimactic when you
find out. Yeah, I'm sure for the players, they're a little bit like they wanted to do the like sitting in the room on the chairs and the camera come on and they cheer. I get that. You can feel bad for losing that experience if you're a player. But
yeah, yeah. But no deal, no big deal. So they will be facing number 10 seed. They're a seventh seed, BYU is, and number 10 seed Auburn in the, I guess, Chicago bracket. Though they're not playing in Chicago, they're playing in, where are they playing? I can't remember now. Doesn't matter. They're playing somewhere on Saturday night. So our brother Don asks us if we will be joining Steve Young in watching the team on Saturday. I don't know what he's talking about. I like Steve. I don't know him, though. I doubt we'll be watching the game together.
Well, if Steve Young lived in my neighborhood, I'd invite him over to the house to watch the game.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Maybe we order some chicken wings or something.
Yeah, I think
that'd be great. Sit and watch some basketball and cheer on the Cougs.
Yeah, that would be great.
Unless he's moved to Houston, more specifically my part of Houston recently, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, of course, we could do it via like Google Hangout.
That's true. You could totally. Google Hangout? What is this? Sure. 2012 called. They'd like their Hangout back. That's probably later than that, right? 2015?
I don't know. I had something pop up in my Facebook, it was in this text exchange with our siblings, where I had taken a picture of a Facebook memory that popped up that said something about who hasn't checked out Google Plus yet.
Google Plus. Remember, it was going to take over. Facebook was going to die. Google Plus was taking over.
Everybody was going to move over to Google Plus.
Yeah, Google Plus. Not a great name, to be honest.
Is my Google Plus like still active?
I think they discontinued Google Plus recently, and it is being discontinued.
Negative. I still have a Google Plus account, but it is going away April 2nd, 2019. Yeah. So they're warning you to download all your Google Plus content. You need to get started before March 31st because it could take some time.
Yes.
This is fascinating. I have not logged into this in who knows how long. Oh my goodness. People I actually like have respect for are using Google Plus still. They are posting things to it. Oh, no, they're not. No, they're not. These are just old posts. Okay, never mind.
Amazing things are all around us, but most people never find them. That's a tagline from Google Plus.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah. These are all from 2016. Awkward.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing. Wow. All right. Well, this is fascinating for the listeners. All right. Moving on from Google Plus, the women's basketball team facing Auburn. Auburn was 22-6 this year, sixth in the SEC. They almost beat number 15 Texas A&M in the SEC quarterfinals. Very last second win by the Aggies to beat the Tigers. But Matt, I'm predicting BYU will win on Saturday night and beat Auburn and advance into the round of 32. Matt?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not even worried about it.
Yeah, I think it's a good matchup for BYU. Auburn is, according to a couple of reports that I've read, very athletic team, but their strength is in guard play, and unfortunately for Auburn, so is BYU, and probably better. So there's that. If they do win that, they will likely face number 2-seeded Stanford, who, you know how much I love Stanford. So go Cougars.
You love Stanford.
Let's take down the tree. Beat the tree. Chop it down. Turn it into firewood. Let's do it.
I like our chances there.
I've seen several people list us as a possible Cinderella.
I think if you look at the rest of that bracket, now granted, I don't know this field as deeply as I know the men's field. I'm just going to go ahead and admit that. But I feel like this is, I mean, and a seven seed is a decent spot, right?
Yeah. Seven seed's a good spot. You don't have to play the top seed. And in that bracket, it is
Notre Dame. Who's amazing, right? Yeah, They're very good.
You don't have to play them. I think Stanford is a substantial step down from that. The other piece is, you know, even if you beat Stanford, you're going to have to play, you know, likely Iowa State, who's also a very good team in the Sweet 16. Now we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but I'm with you. I think they could make a run, or they could get beat on Saturday, right? That's the thing about the tournament is, you know, it's not like Auburn's a terrible team, right? I think BYU will win. But if Auburn has a really good game and BYU does not, game over. But I think they've got a really good shot.
It'll be fun for sure. I look forward to watching it.
I do plan on to answer Don's question. I do plan on watching that game on Saturday, 2:30 Central Time on ESPN2. I wonder if they're going to reveal the game ahead of time.
Can they do that? Man, see what you did there.
All right. So Matt, let's talk about men's basketball now. So the news, if you can consider it news, seeing that it happened days ago, but we're recording this on Tuesday night, BYU decided not to participate in any of the non-NIT postseason tournaments. In most cases, you have to pay to get into them, and you play teams that probably shouldn't be in Division I basketball. So BYU opted not to do that. Matt, the right or wrong decision for the Cougars and Tom Homo and Dave Rose?
Yeah, I feel like when we talk about this in football, and maybe even when we've talked about this before, I'm always you go play the games. But for a $50,000 entry fee and kind of the way this season ended, I don't think I'd go play these games either. I think it's a waste of time.
No, in football with the bowl games, you get a payout, you get TV exposure, you get all the extra practices, you get all of these things. With the CBI or whatever these other tournaments are called, you get none of that, right? So I think it's a waste of time. I'm all for playing in any bowl game you get invited to, and I'm all for playing in the NIT every year that you get invited. And quite frankly, I'm a little mystified that San Diego got into the NIT and we did not. I get that they beat us in the tournament, but we beat them twice in the regular season. I have a stronger basically everything than them. It's an odd... The NIT is weird, and I don't know why they picked San Diego over us. But in the end, doesn't matter. We didn't get in, so moving on and not too worried about it. Matt, we are not going to talk about – there have been some articles and lots of tweets about Dave Rose's future. You and I have talked about that ad nauseum over the past month, so we're moving on. You and I don't believe anything's going to happen with Dave Rose between now and when his contract ends.
Yeah, moving on. Let's come on.
So let's move on to the NCAA tournament, Matt. The aforementioned tweet from Andre Hutchins, and you can tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. Andre's handle there. Is handle still a thing? Have I said this before? I feel like I say this frequently. Anyway, his, what do you call it? Is it his, it's not his screen name. We're not going back to AOL here. Is it a handle?
Screen name?
Screen name.
Screen name? You've got
screen
mail.
Name? You've got mail.
His screen name.
His screen name is
That's
at
adorable.
@AC_Hutchins. Captain Marvel was very ho-hum. How dare you, Andre? I don't
my
even know what that means,
name.
Though, Andre. What does ho-hum mean? You didn't like it,
no,
or
Andre,
you just thought it was average?
Andre's screen name is ho-hum.
So he says Shazam was absolutely amazing. Oh, you got to see it early. You're so special, right? Doesn't Shazam come out like in a few weeks? Like, I don't know,
because I saw a clip yesterday that was floating around the internet. What's the actor's name who plays Shazam?
Zachary Levi is his name.
He was at some event, and some girl who was like a huge fan of the movie came up to meet him and just started crying. And then he started crying, and he like gave her a hug, and then her mom was talking about like how this character like really resonated with her somehow. So clearly that girl's seen the movie.
But wait a second, does it come out like April 4th or something?
I don't know what to tell you. Maybe she's just familiar with the character. I don't know. I'm just telling you what happened in the clip.
Yeah, let's see. It comes
he's
out
apparently
April 5th.
Zachary Levi is a social crier. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. So he also says Endgame is going to crush us. We didn't actually answer. Going back to Endgame, we didn't answer Randy's second question at the beginning of the podcast about our anticipation level. So let's do that now. Zero to Detmer, what is your anticipation level for Endgame?
I'm at like DEFCON 100, so Detmer.
Detmer,
tops.
It's totally Detmer.
Like over right. Detmer. I'm over Detmer excited about Endgame.
Yes. And
that trailer that we watched last week that just came out?
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've watched it.
Goose pimples, Matt. Goose pimples. Gave me the goose pimples.
That's gross.
It's the way the British say it. And he says he agrees with us, the Lady Cougs. I wouldn't call them the Lady Cougs, by the way. 1990 for calls.
They're just the Cougars.
They're just the Cougars. Will win their first game and advanced. Well, I said it was his screen name, so this is the 1990s.
His screen name.
And the Lady Cougs will win their first game and advance.
What's your
tourney.
Screen name?
Who do we have making it to the men's final four? So, Matt, it's time for you and I to predict the
I
final
never
four.
Have my bracket done when we record.
It doesn't matter. Just tell me. Who do you have coming out of the East bracket? Of course, the top seed there is Duke. The number two seed is Michigan State. Are you picking?
Yeah, this is the easiest bracket. This is the easiest section.
Okay.
It's Duke.
Yeah, it's Duke. Here's the thing. Michigan State is the worst two seed, in my opinion. So, anyway, yeah, I think it's Duke. Okay, so let's go to the West. Opposite them, which of course the number one seed is Gonzaga, the number two seed is Michigan. Who do you got coming out of there?
This one's a little bit tougher, but I'm taking Michigan.
I am going to go with number six seed Buffalo. I'm totally kidding.
That would be so bizarre.
I'm going to actually go with number seven seed Nevada.
Are you serious right now?
They're my Cinderella pick for the Final Four. Big Cinderella pick. Plus, I'm angry at Gonzaga this year. I don't know why, so I don't want to pick them.
I'm angry at Gonzaga every year, so that's cool.
All right. Out of the South, you've got number one seed UVA, number two seed Tennessee. Are you picking either of those teams?
I'm taking Virginia.
I am taking Tennessee out of that bracket. And in the Midwest, number one seed is North Carolina. Number two seed is Kentucky. Who you got out of the Midwest?
I'm going crazy here. I'm taking Houston.
Ooh, that so there's your upset pick. I think Houston beats Kentucky and gets to the Elite Eight, but I think UNC ultimately wins there. So my final four is Duke, North Carolina, who did I say? Buffalo, Nevada, and Tennessee. And I ultimately think that Duke wins the championship. Matt, who's your
I've got Duke winning the championship. We're playing the rest of the games just for pure entertainment value.
Well, you know, it's good to have Zion healthy, and hopefully he's switched over to some Adidas.
He's such a ridiculous talent. Oh, so ridiculous.
Amazing, amazing, amazing talent. So Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney!
At Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter says, better sports weekend, March Madness round one this weekend. Or college football opening weekend, hashtag tweetbag. So, Matt, best sports weekend. I've got a very strong opinion, but I'll let you go first.
You know what? It's college football opening weekend for me.
It's March Madness for me, and it's not particularly close, and here's why. 4 days of straight action, right? Including 2 full days on Thursday and Friday. Well, it's Saturday and Sunday. It's full days too, right? Thursday and Friday are amazing. And unfortunately, I'm going to be traveling for work on Thursday, so I will miss more than I would like. And Friday, I've got a few things going on for work. So, but wow, I love it.
So you may remember this, okay? But so my wedding anniversary is this week. And what that means actually, it doesn't mean this, but whatever. So what that tells you is I got married right at the beginning of the NCAA tournament. Okay. And we were married in Salt Lake City. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but after we came after the wedding, I surprised my wife with a little horse drawn carriage ride or whatever. Right. So we were riding around in this carriage talking. We go to a hotel where there's going to be this like open house and some food and stuff. Right. And so reception, whatever you want to call it. So we're they drop us off in front of this hotel, and it was tournament weekend. There were games being played in Salt Lake, and a couple of teams were staying in the hotel. And when my wife and I got out of the carriage and walked into the lobby, there were two teams of cheerleaders that were waiting in the lobby for their ride over to whatever the Delta Center, whatever it was called then, or whatever it's called now. I don't even know what it's called now.
It's not called the Delta Center.
Whatever it is, the Salt Palace, whatever it is.
Salt Palace, so 1988 called.
So we walk in. My screen name is Salt Palace. All right, so we get out of this carriage. We walk into the lobby, and the cheerleaders just all erupt, you know, because we're obviously, like, we clearly just got married. And they're, like, you know, waving pom-poms and, like, doing little – I mean, they – you know, in my mind, they were, like, doing backflips and stuff in the lobby, but I'm sure that's not accurate because, yeah, that would they just – that just
sure.
Dangerous. Let's but just it was a pretty cool way – it was a pretty cool way to celebrate the wedding. It was a pretty cool way to celebrate the wedding. But what it means, Adam, what it means is this. It means that this Friday, like, we're supposed to go out to celebrate our anniversary. How am I supposed to watch basketball? Like,
well, you just
what am I supposed to do? I made a grave mistake many years ago.
No, you didn't. It's not a big deal. You miss a few games. You never catch all of the games all weekend, right? Not since you were single. So,
It's been since that year I got all the games in a weekend.
So, anyway.
Next year's the year I'm going to plan to be in recovery for the entire weekend.
Recovery from what? I don't understand.
I'm just saying that it's a thing people do.
You recover from what? You'll need to explain. 2020
is the year. 2020 is the year, baby.
May
I will catch every single game. March every single game.
Okay. All right. We'll see about that. I got laid off last year, and so I caught every single game because I had nothing else to do.
I actually remember that.
I was like,
that was awesome and sad at the same time.
This stinks, but I'm going to make the most of it. I'm going to watch every stinking game. I didn't do any job searching. I did nothing. That whole weekend, I watched a ton of basketball. So it was fun. So Chris Gregory on Facebook has this question for us. In addition to Jimmer, who would be on your BYU NCAA tournament dream team if you could have any former players? So if you could enter this team into the tournament, by the way, this would be like a number one seed team, right? But I'm going to let you go first. Who are your five? Or do you want me to go first?
Oh, I think we should do it in a draft.
We're not doing it in a draft. We each get to pick a team, so then we say whose team's going
to
win.
And we don't have to have – okay, so I'm taking Jimmer.
Okay.
I'm taking Ainge.
Okay.
And then I don't care who else I get.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's a dumb answer. I'm taking Jimmer. I'm taking Ainge. Okay. And I'm going to take why can't I think of his name right now? I want to say Nick Emery, but that's not the right name.
Okay, I'll go back and give you a five when we're done, but go ahead and you finish. I'll be like Kanye or whatever his
Jackson,
name is.
Jackson Emery. Why can't I think of Jackson Emery's name? I want Jackson Emery, Jimmer, Mr. Ainge, Mr. Michael Smith, and then I need a big man, so I'm gonna go with Eric Mika. That's my five. And they beat whoever your five are.
Okay, so I'm taking Fredette and Ainge, which I already said.
Okay.
I'm taking Krešimir Kosić.
I didn't pick him because I didn't see him play. So that's cool, though. You can take him.
And I think I also want Michael Smith.
You think you also want, or you're picking
him? Yeah, but then the rest of my team, I feel like it's your team. And so that's not interesting. So now I want to fish and find somebody else. Because I was going to say Michael Smith and Jackson Emery because I like the defense.
Yeah, the defense was amazing. He was really good at defense and offense, too. But Kosić and Smith would be quite a pair of versatile passing big men. That would be a good swap. And by the way, if you ask me the same question next week, I'd have a different five.
You know what? I might take a Devin Durant.
Devin Durant's a great choice. Devin Durant's an excellent choice. Yeah, there's a lot of good players. We talked about this before, who our 10 would be, right? We had a whole show on that. Year or two ago.
We have. Actually, on May 24th, 2016, you and you published for the Deseret News
a
top 10 basketball players in BYU history draft that you and I did that I have in front of me right now.
Yeah, see, my answers would change and it's fascinating. All the time. My answers would change all the time.
But you know what? The answers aren't really that different. The top six players in that draft, when me and you in a snake order, I went first because you're magnanimous. Danny Ainge, Jimmer Fredette, Krešimir Kosić, Tyler Haws, Devin Durant, Michael Smith. So, I mean, your answers today versus your answers
Tyler Haws in that draft in the top six?
Yeah. Yeah, it was recency bias. Huge recency Lions.
Tyler Haas. No, don't get me wrong. I love Tyler Haas.
Dude, and I took Kyle Collinsworth at 8. And then I took Araujo at 9. Dude, that was a mess.
I'm not sure. I thought about doing Collinsworth. I actually think Collinsworth's not a bad pick for your top 10, but Araujo wasn't your best. There were better big men.
Yeah, but Araujo.
Though he was great.
Araujo had the most interesting combination of tattoos of any basketball player at BYU ever.
That is probably true. All right, Matt, let's move on to football. We've got an interesting Facebook comment from Clark Early. He said, and I'm assume all these facts are true because I trust Clark like he's one of us, which means I don't trust him at all. But we're going to assume they're true.
They are true. I've independently verified these facts.
Okay, all right. The Pocatello Idaho Temple groundbreaking was last Saturday, he says. Elder S. Gifford Nielsen, I've heard of him, conducted, and Taysom Hill gave the opening prayer. Should they change the temple name to the Pocatello Idaho Temple brought to you by BYU football? Can we expect more football success now that these two quarterbacks helped dedicate the ground for a temple? No. And do we need to rededicate Lavelle Edwards Stadium?
Probably.
But I don't know. I don't know what any of this means, but I do find it interesting. Obviously, having Gifford Nielsen involved, I mean, he's a journal authority, so having him involved is not weird at all, right? Taysom Hill.
And is he from Idaho originally?
I don't know.
I don't know where Gifford Nielsen is from. I know that he's spent his time after his NFL career here in Houston, but I don't know where he's from originally.
Well, if only the internet could tell us.
Or, it could just be associated with his current his current church assignment, right? That's why he's
was
there.
Provo. So I don't know.
I'm guessing he's there as a result of his current church assignment. I don't think
he's an Idaho connection. He went to Provo High? Huh.
Now known as BYU East or West or whatever.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't realize that. Learned something new every day.
I was surprised too to see a picture of Taysom Hill with one of those shovels in the line with Gifford Nielsen and others like taking the first shovel full of dirt. There was Taysom Hill.
He is from the area and he plays.
Yeah, so are like a billion other people. Like, why does he get a shovel?
Because he plays for the Saints.
Right. That's cool. Well, I mean, he's a great
call
guy.
Him a saint
I love
anymore,
Taysom. I'm glad he was able to participate in that. But I just found that fascinating.
It is very interesting. But he's a quality guy, man. He's a quality guy. So Moroni MLP. I'll call him MLP. He is ahead of schedule, Matt. His surgically repaired knee is going very, very well. Not participating in contact this spring, but he is participating at a certain level, which is great. New surgical procedure. He's on track to be in fall camp and contribute next year. So, Matt, assuming full health for Bushman and MLP, which I get is a tough assumption, seeing that neither of them are playing right now. But assuming full health, who is the top tight end for BYU in 2019? Bushman, MLP, or somebody else?
It's MLP, baby.
Nah, it's Bushman.
Oh, hogwash.
Bushman is a next level talent. He's going to play in the pros.
Maybe they'll both play in the pros. I think this could turn out to be like a Chad Lewis Atulamili situation.
We
have two really good tight ends. I mean, and they might be the two best receivers on the field.
I think they will certainly be in the top three.
Those guys were both NFL level talent. I think Atulamili, without the knee injuries, could have had a more productive NFL career even than Chad Lewis did. I think Atulamili was the better of the tight end while they were in college.
I agree with you there. The pro thing is hard to say, but it's certainly not ridiculous to say it just because Chad Lewis ended up having a pretty decent, NFL career. So it's hard to say that Atulamili would have been better. But
what a killer combination those two were, right?
For Zach Wilson, here's the thing. If you're going to potentially be limited at running back, which I'm not today – I've argued that we won't be because I think if Katoa stays healthy all year, you've got to feature back, and the other people on the roster are good enough to back him up. No depth, I get it, right? The depth is not where you'd want it to be. But if you're going to have a weak running back position, you know what would really help? Two really good tight ends who can run block or go out for a pass on any given play. And Bushman has improved, and MLP was getting just raves about his run blocking before he got hurt last year, right? As well as being a threat in the passing game. So, well, Matt, we're going to play a game of BYU football, true or false. Are you ready?
I am prepared for this.
I am going to read some statements. They are going to be statements as if they are fact. You're going to tell me, and then I will give my opinion as well, whether these statements are true or false.
Let's do this.
All right, here we go. First one. Joe Critchlow getting a lot of reps in the spring is meaningless because he's never going to sniff the field in 2019. Matt, true or false?
I'm filling in the circle that says true here.
I am also filling
on my little Scantron.
So what percent chance that Joe Critchlow plays meaningful snaps in 2019?
For me, that's the same percent chance that both Jaren Hall and Zach Wilson suffered debilitating injuries at some point during the season.
He's
it's the same.
Third. He's not the
it's
third.
Just not going to happen.
He's not the third. He's fourth. Romney will be ahead of him. So
but even then, you're not getting anywhere. I don't know. I feel like if you get that deep, he could play some meaningful snaps.
Only early in the season. I don't think Critchlow sees the field. Nothing against him. All right, statement
number
two.
He's the future.
Yeah, he's the future. Are you ready for statement number two?
I am ready.
Satake calling Hall, Jaren Hall, the leader of the QBs. Did I say Jaren Hall again?
I don't know what you said. Just don't call him Max Hall.
Okay, I won't call him Max Hall. The leader of the QBs might be a message, and he meant leader of the QBs this spring is the quote, might be a message to Zach Wilson and the team that there's going to be a QB battle this fall. Matt, true or false?
False.
True.
I don't think there's going to be a QB battle, and I don't think Satake's trying to signal anything here.
I think Satake is trying to signal something, and I think Hall, I think Grimes and Satake have come to a meritocracy, right? They're going to play who they think is going to win the games. And
play to win the game.
And if Hall is that guy come the first game of the season, then I think it'll be Hall. Now, I'm not predicting that. I think it will be Wilson, but I think he's setting this up a little bit so that if nothing else, Wilson does not feel completely entitled to just walking in and, you know, doing it halfway in fall camp.
I think they're just trying to tell Hall that they're pleased with what they're seeing out of him and that he needs to keep his chin up. This is the better way of doing that than what they did to Critchlow last year, right? What they did to Critchlow last year is they said a bunch of things just like blatantly weren't true. But I think with Hall, I think this is the coaches trying to send a signal to him. I don't think this has anything to do with Wilson, where they're saying that they're pleased with what he's seeing. He needs to just keep it up, and his time will eventually come.
Yeah. The thing is, his time may never come, right, if there's not injury, right? And he may be good enough to start, as we talked about last week or the week before. I don't know. I think it was 2 weeks ago. I don't know that the talent level difference between him and Wilson is huge or not. We don't know. But based on how they were recruited, based on his performance and some of the things they've talked about in practice, I don't know that it's a huge gap. But if Wilson doesn't get injured and continues to play well, then he plays. And then you've got, you know, these wonder kid recruits coming back from Mission that, you know, it may just be bad timing, which has been true for other QBs in the program, right? You just never got that shot. Now, again, injuries are the most likely reason he gets a shot, right? And people get hurt. So Matt, statement number three, are you ready?
Yes.
With MLP and Bushman not playing this spring, the tight end position is going to build necessary depth.
False.
I am going to agree with you. False. Most of the people getting playing time this spring aren't going to see about as much time as Critchlow. So they're just warm bodies filling in for the spring. There's a couple of them that will probably factor in, but I don't think so. All right. Any other comments on the tight end position?
You don't develop depth just in these couple of weeks in spring practice.
No, that's also true. Good point. Number four, Isaiah Kafusi will be the next big impact Kafusi on the BYU defense.
It's got to be true, right?
No,
like,
what's his
competition for? Yeah, okay, maybe. But yeah, this is true.
This is true. And to go even further, I think Isaiah Kafusi, if fully healthy, come spring, could be one of our best two or three players on the defense. I think that's possible. That's his upside for this next year. Is that true or false? I'm adding in. That's a
best two or three players on defense.
Yeah, I think that's his upside. Not that.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's possible. That's possible. I mean, he's shown some real flashes in a couple of big moments last year. So yeah, I think that's. I could go with that.
Yeah, I think he's a, you know, does well at the line of scrimmage and is adequate in coverage, right? And one of the things where he got playing time over Butch Pau, besides some health issues that Pau had, unfortunately, for most of his career, right, which was unfortunate, because when he was healthy, he was a heck of a player. Was pass coverage, right? He could take care of a running back in the pass game, right? And some of the other linebackers struggled with that. So hopefully, Kafusi comes back completely healthy. He's another guy that's not participating in spring. And the last one, Matt, is nothing that happens in spring practice and the spring practice on Saturday really means anything. True or false?
True. That's just a truth.
I'm going to say false. That's too strong for me. I don't know that you can take – we will make next week probably on the podcast wild speculations about it, right? A couple of years ago, I thought Isaiah Kafusi was going to be a star, you know, in the 2017 season, which of course he did not, but he did end up being a significant contributor last season. But I think that one is false just because it's too strong. But Saturday is not going to be like, we're not going to learn a whole ton with our starting quarterback. The offense is like half the people aren't going to be playing and the defense is about the same. So yeah, I'm not too worried about it. Matt, speaking of that spring practice, Wade Hillam on Facebook asked this: I'll be at the open spring practice on Saturday. Anything specific you want me to keep an eye on to report back? So do you have a homework assignment for Wade?
Actually, I have a couple. So you've said a couple of times that you don't feel like there's a giant drop off between Wilson and Hall, or really, or maybe even among the top two to three quarterbacks. Is that fair?
Top three quarterbacks. I think the overall talent gap between Wilson, Hall, and Romney is probably not as big as we think it is.
So fans. I'd be interested in Wade and what you can observe around kind of where, if you agree with Adam's statement or not, based on what you see. I think we have a little bit more data on Hall because we've seen him play a little bit. With Romney, I feel like there's just really no data. So I'd like for somebody to put eyes on it and say whether or not they think Adam is crazy with this assessment, or if that feels about right. I'm also interested to see what we do from an offensive line standpoint, how much shuffling around goes on there, and whether the same units are staying together with the same quarterback all the time, and generally kind of how do they look like they're working out with the new O-line coach.
Okay, those are two good ones. I'll add in another offensive one, which is I would like to see if there's, you know, any flashes of running backs besides Katoa that makes anybody think, wow, maybe that guy could be a big contributor next fall. So just throw one in there. Matt, there was a story out of College Sports Maven, which I'd never heard of this website, but BYU was named one of the top 10 most underrated football programs in history. Now, if you read the article, it's kind of, they used a, you know, based on how the team finished and how they were ranked ahead of time was a big part of it. The schools are in order from 10 to 1: Baylor, Kansas State, TCU, BYU, Washington State, Oregon, Boise State, Utah, Boston College, and Missouri. You know, it's interesting, but those are the ones that he mentions. Matt, do you believe that BYU belongs on this list of underrated programs in college football history?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we do. I think that, you know, I think we are the type of program that most serious college football fans see us as. You know, I think we're not quite like a P5 type of school, and I think that's the way most people view us. So I don't know if I feel like we're underrated.
Yeah,
is that a lame answer? I mean, I'm not being a homer enough, but I feel like we're pretty properly assessed in most serious football fans' eyes.
So the way he looked at it, Christopher Walsh, the author, was, and I'll just read his write-up because it's quite short. The Cougars had never been ranked before LaVell Edwards took over in 1972. They never had deserved to be ranked. They were terrible, okay? The first six times it finished in the AP poll, including 1984 when Brigham Young won the national championship, it began the season unranked. I would say in the 80s, we were highly, even after winning the national championship, we were underrated. Like every year, BYU had to kind of start over and prove itself. I don't think that's true anymore. So maybe historically we are one of the most. So I'm going to say it's true and where we belong on this list. But now if BYU has a good run, we get in the top 25, right? That happened this year, right? If we start winning, we get the benefit of the doubt as opposed to some other teams, right? Boise used to be underrated, but they aren't anymore, right? If they're good, they get ranked.
Mm-hmm.
But historically, I would say Boise probably deserves a spot on this list, and they're not. The other one is, you know, in the end, who cares, right? But I think we probably are. So anyway, all right, kind of an interesting piece. Matt, I think that's all we have for BYU sports. So now it comes time for the most anticipated show of the year, our baseball, Major League Baseball preview.
Yes.
So Spencer Thurman, who's been super excited about this, has a series of questions for us. So let's just go and do Spencer's questions as our preview, man.
And some of these questions have already played out.
Yes, some of them have already played out.
Specifically this first one.
So, and then he sent a subsequent email, which I'll reference here. So this came through email. You can email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. So his first question is, if Bryce Harper can get 13 years and $330 million from Philadelphia, how much will Mike Trout get in 2 years? Will we finally see a $400 million contract? Chances for a $500 million contract? Well, since he sent that email to us earlier in the week, the story has broke, or at least they believe that this is true. Sources are saying Trout and Halos agreed to a, what is it, 12 years, $400 million?
12-year, $430 million contract.
Yeah, $430, which would be the most, the biggest one ever.
It's the biggest contract in professional sports history.
So I will tell you right now, there's a great article on ESPN.com right now which argues this, that he is worth probably to any team probably between $65 and $80 million a year. And so that he's actually over that term probably worth to the team $1 billion, right? Now that doesn't mean that's what the market will get because the market's not perfect. I would say right now that this is a bargain for the Angels because unlike when they signed Pujols, who was at the end of his prime, and they got a couple of really good years out of him, but then it's been pretty rough since then. This is you're getting maybe, dare I say it, I'll be even more superlative. The best player in baseball history outside of Babe Ruth during all of his prime years.
Well, and I think also what's attractive to them for this is they've locked him up. He will play his entire career as an Angel.
Yeah, pretty much.
So
yeah.
even if they don't win a World Series with him, which you'd have to think that they're assuming that they will for $430 million. But even if they don't, there is some value in locking him up that way in today's environment. Nobody does that.
Well, and
nobody stays.
And because of how good he has been so young, he has a chance. Now, there's still a lot of baseball to be played and injuries and stuff, but he has a chance to break almost every major record in baseball. Home runs, yep. Hits, you know, all these things. So you keep him in the uniform, and if he does continue to play like he has. But here's the other thing. He's way better than Harper. Like, I get that some people are like, well, Harper had that one good year that was like a Trout year. Trout has that year every year, right? Trout has not had ups and downs like Harper has, right? And he is a better fielder than Harper is. So in my mind, he was always going to get more money. The question was how much more, and now we learn $100 million more, even though it was a year less in length. So Harper held the title for...
like 10 minutes.
Well, but here's the thing. We talked about this last time. Harper's a dummy, okay? He's a dummy, right? I would have made a totally different decision than he did. Maxing this out should not have been his goal, right? Getting the highest dollar value so you beat Machado and Stanton should not have been his goal because it wasn't going to last. Everybody knew that Trout, whether he hit free agency or not, was going to blow this out, right? So the question became, how could you maximize? I would have taken, like I said last week or the week before, I would have taken the four-year deal from the Dodgers where you're making like $60 million a year.
And right. Then you're still in your like physical prime when you hit free agency next time.
And then you sign a 6 or 7 year contract after that. And you end up probably getting more money total than you did from this deal with the Phillies. And by the way, you don't have to play for the Phillies. That's the other great benefit of what I would have done if I was Mr. Harper. All right. Next one. Have you seen the new baseball rules for 2019 and 2020? Will any of them make any real difference in the pace of play? Are there any you love or hate? Personally, I like the one trade deadline rule. The rest of them don't seem to make much of a difference at all. So, Matt, let's talk about those new baseball rules. The first one he mentioned is the trade deadline rule where there's only one trade deadline. How do you feel about that one?
The trade deadline stuff has always been a little bit weird, but I don't know. That's not a game changer for me.
I think
the two trade deadlines, it was always weird.
Yeah, I think the one that's more interesting to me than that is the roster, right? You won't have all of those players, right? That doesn't come until 2020, right? The roster rule, I'm pretty sure, is not a 2019 rule. But they're going to expand from 25 to 26 players, but in September you'll only expand that by two. Because I just thought it was ridiculous in the middle, and I've thought this forever, in the middle of the most important games of the year, you expand the roster to 40 people, right?
Right.
So let's go through the other changes here. In 2020 as well, pitchers will have to face a minimum of three batters or the end of an inning before they can be removed. Matt, up, thumbs up or thumbs down on that one?
Thumbs up.
Me too. I think it's fantastic, right? And Tony La Russa is upset about it already because he wants to change them already. And no position players pitching outside of extra innings or score margins of 7+ runs. So I hate this rule. I think you should be able to pitch whoever you want. And I also don't like the rule of limiting how many pitchers you can carry on your roster.
I'm with you there.
You should be able to carry whatever you want, and you should be able to use position players however you want. If you want to pitch them in the third inning of a blowout game, or you just you've used all your pitchers lately and you use them in a non-leveraged situation, I would totally go with it. So I think that's a dumb rule. What about the shortening of commercial breaks?
I like it, but I understand they can't like totally eliminate those, right? But I in the local games, you're not really doing anything for me. In the national games, maybe over time.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Spencer's. I don't know that's going to have the impact that people think it's going to have.
What's really going to have the impact is the pitching changes and limiting the number of mound visits. Those two things are going to have the impact, because that's what kills you, right? Is you're waiting for the guy to warm up, or you're waiting for, you know, you're just sitting there waiting for these guys to finish their conversation out on the mound.
Yeah. Okay. His third question is, some baseball teams have an attendance problem. So what do you think of a policy where, after the third inning, all fans in the upper bowl can advance down to the good seats if they are empty? Seems like those seats are probably paid for, so the team doesn't lose out on revenue, and the fan experience would be better, resulting in more attendance. Win-win? No. Can't do this one. Sorry, Spencer.
Yeah, but what if I'm at the bat? What if I've got great seats, but I have to go to the bathroom or get a drink?
No, I
don't
think
back, and now it's my responsibility to get you kicked out of my seat?
Yeah. I don't think this one works. I think there's a lot of things that teams that are having attendance problems could do.
Stop selling the seats up top.
Cover
them up with a tarp and just sell the lower seats.
Well, but here's the problem with that. When the team gets bad and a bunch of these lower seat tickets are owned by companies, right? You don't know if they're coming or not. If the company doesn't turn them back in, right, because they want to wait till the last second and decide if they're going to use them for a client or whatever. I think what you do is you've got to really discount your tickets later, right? Because I get that there's a cost and all this other stuff to people coming, and you got how many more vendors do you want? I would just like, if you're the terrible team, you should be basically giving tickets away by the end of the year. Fill that thing up as much as you can and get people in the experience. The other thing I would do is you've got to get with school groups and young people and get them to the game with discounted tickets. And if you are not selling out and it's a year where you're not competitive, that's the year when you do it. It's an investment for the future, and I think you got to do it. The other part is discounted concessions later in the year. So,
oh yeah, big deal on concessions. That will put butts in seats.
Yeah. You got cheaper beer,
dollar
cheaper
hot
food,
dog nights, all that stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff to get people in there. All right, his fourth.
You know, the Nationals, the first couple of years the Nationals were in D.C. Actually, even maybe the first year they were in the new stadium, they would have guys. The first year I saw this, I was in a grocery store out in Fairfax County, right? So I'm outside of DC. I'm in a grocery store, and a guy approaches me and says, I've got my son with me. And he says, "Hey, do you like baseball?" I said, "Yeah, I love baseball." And he says, "I've got these packets." And it was basically it was like you were buying vouchers for tickets, and they were dirt cheap, and you got like six games, and each ticket had you could pick to use that ticket like during the month of July or something. I can't remember exactly how it worked, but you would just show up on a game day in that stretch, and they would give you a ticket in a section, so you might be like up high, you might have decent seats. It kind of depended on how full the stadium was that day. But you know what that did is it got people in. I saw a lot of people using them. I purchased a couple of them. And it got people into the stadium, and especially – and the way they did it was brilliant, right? Like they were out canvassing the area, targeting people with younger kids to try and get them out to the ballpark.
Yeah.
And those are the types of things you got to think through when you're trying to get people in seats. But you're right. You do it in the years that you're not competitive, and then as you get competitive, people like me are then going to – now they're into it, and they'll pay real money for tickets.
Yeah, for sure. Matt, question number four from him is over under for years that Manny Machado is in San Diego, 6.5. He's taking the under. I'm taking the over. Manny's not going anywhere.
Under.
You're taking the under as well. So you think he ends up getting traded at some point during this?
Yep.
Okay. What team that didn't make the playoffs last year is going to surprise us all and make some noise in October? His is the Nationals, and he's not just trying to kiss up to you.
I appreciate that, but mine is also the Nationals. And I'm not just trying to kiss up to me either.
Boring. What you guys said is boring. But I'm also.
What do you mean it's boring? It's a good answer to the question because it's likely the right pick.
Well, let's go to Google Plus and see what they have to say.
Oh boy, Google Plus. So this will tell you what was true in 2016.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Angels. I'm gonna go with the Angels.
They just inked a great deal.
Yeah, they just inked a great deal for a player they already had. So that should definitely make them better. And it's the right thing to do. I already covered that. But he says, how about this? Expansion seems inevitable. If you were the commissioner, what would be the most important criteria in choosing an expansion team? Geography or population? He said, you know, it'd be good to spread these teams out or give travel partners or different things. But he said, so cities like Portland, Vancouver, Salt Lake City, or Vegas. But he said the cities like Nashville, San Antonio, Montreal, or even Mexico City might bring more new fans and hence dollars to the sport. Matt, let's say they're going to expand by, well, we got 15 teams in each league right now. So you're going to expand by one in each league. So you're going to have two more teams. Where do you put those teams?
One of those teams is in Mexico City.
Okay. Where's the other
one? I would jump all over that. The second one is a little bit harder for me, but I think you've got to go somewhere. I think you've got to go West Coast.
You know that Mexico City is also in the West.
Yeah, but I think you're right. But I'd probably go Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. No, look at what Las Vegas did.
Look at what Las Vegas has done. Look at the way they're embracing professional sports teams. You know, you look at the following that the Knights had generated and the buzz there. Now it helps that they, you know, went to the Stanley Cup Finals. But you look at what's happening there with professional sports in Las Vegas. You could strike while the iron's hot and get people to jump on to a professional sports team. I mean, these guys are – but the thing you're going to struggle with, I understand that, is that people in Vegas, they're all Dodgers fans.
Well, 81 right? Because that's who games, they got on man. TV forever. That's what you're going to struggle with. 81 home dates in Vegas. You're going to have like a stadium like in Phoenix that's covered and air-conditioned, right, because it's brutal. I hear what you're saying. Here's what I would do if I were commissioner. I would do two things. I would expand, and I'd put one team on, I don't know if it's Portland or Vancouver, but probably one team up there. And then I am going to move the Tampa Bay Rays out of Tampa.
Yes.
And I'm going to
put
them in Brooklyn. I'm going to put a third team in New York.
That's a little crazy.
And because here's the thing. The way to split up Boston, LA, New York, and all those things is to put more teams there and split the revenues locally, right? Because right now, Boston, LA, New York, they have massive revenue superiority, right, to most of the franchises. But I would put a team.
That's how LA was able to sign Trout to that, right? They got that TV deal.
Correct. So I would say you do that, and maybe the other, I don't know, Mexico City's interesting to me. I don't know if it's the right call. I also think San Antonio could be interesting. I am totally against Las Vegas. I think that's a terrible idea. I'm against all things Las Vegas. That's not true, actually. I have nothing against Las Vegas. I think they will really struggle to support a baseball team. Hockey's one thing. It's a smaller stadium, and it's kind of a niche thing, and they were good right away. Football, you only have 8 home dates to fill, right?
And it'll be a destination place for the see for football. It's easier to play it off as a destination location.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if the Patriots were playing a game in Las Vegas,
you go right
because you'd cool. go like yeah, because yeah. that would be cool. But you're not going to do that for 80. You're not going to do that for 80 home games.
You know the Las Vegas Gamblers. Are you going on that trip in August?
And you can't name them after gambling or aliens. Just don't do that. Please don't do that. Oh,
can they please name them after aliens?
Oh my gosh. That's what that minor league team was, the Area 51ers or something. So come on, stop it.
How about after nuclear energy somehow?
Nuclear?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, all right. So let's make our predictions, Matt. Are you ready? Time for predictions.
Let's do it.
Here. Let's go to the American League East. Who's your winner?
American League East. Sorry, I'm stalling while I flip over to
Red
my
Sox.
To this other tab.
Yes, pick Red anybody Sox. Else. All right, American League Central. I'm picking the Indians.
Yeah, I'm picking the Indians.
American League West, I'm actually picking the Athletics.
I'm taking the Astros, baby.
All right, and who are your two wildcard teams?
The Athletics and the Yankees.
I'm taking the Astros and the Yankees, so we end up having the same teams. Who comes?
And also all the same teams that made the playoffs last year.
Yes, yes. Who ends up coming out of the American League to the World Series?
The Athletics.
I am going to go with the Astros. All right. National League, Matt, in the East, you're a homer, so you're taking the Nationals.
I'm going to take the Nationals.
I'm also going to take the Nationals. I think they're the best team this year. In the Central, I am going to take the Cardinals.
I'm taking the Cubs.
Taking the Cubs. And in the West, I am going to take the Dodgers.
You know what? Just to be different, I'm going to take the Rockies.
All right. And just to be different, you're weird. Who are the two wildcard teams?
See, this is where I won't be different, is I'm taking the Dodgers and the Braves.
I'm taking the Brewers and the Cubs. It's all coming out of the Central. And then I say the team that comes out and plays the Astros in the World Series is your Washington Nationals.
Oh, that's awesome, because I wasn't going to pick them to do that.
Imagine if it was the Astros and the Nationals. Would you try to get to that World Series?
Yes, that would happen.
Yeah, so that would be pretty sweet. Well, Matt, that's our Major League preview. By the way, I always pick Mike Trout for American League MVP.
There's not another pick.
I think you pick him over the field every year. I think you pick him over the field. In the National League, I just pick the field. I wouldn't pick somebody over it. Anyway, all right, well, that's it. So who's still with us? We should do a hashtag. A hashtag.
What should it be?
I survived MLB preview.
Yes.
I survived MLB preview. Hashtag. Let us know if you stayed to the end. Justin Sweeney, I know you did. You love.
Yeah, don't even try and pretend like you didn't listen to this, Sweeney, because we all know you did.
You love baseball more than you even love BYU football. It's okay. It's okay to admit your problem.
That's just factually inaccurate.
Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We will be back next week to talk spring football, probably some women's basketball, among other things. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/riseandshout. As I said before, you can always email us if you have questions or want to leave some comments about the show, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!